Our matey, welcome to this week's episode of the Leadership to Wealth podcast. We're going to be talking about gold today, precious metals, why they're beneficial to you. We actually get into things like the foreign buyers ban and, you know, what the impacts are. What is the overall purpose, you know, for us as nationalists versus globalists, how all of this stuff fits in and how you can use it to your benefit. First of all, foreigners buying homes here in Canada, forget about Canada. Every country in the world should be limiting foreign buyers. You never want to have a situation where people from another country can potentially take over the landscape of your country. You don't want to have that where they can now control you economically. We've tried to take so many measures and put them into place to avoid these types of things. And so this is not something new. Every country needs to be aware and protect against foreign buyers, right? Because someone can come in, some country could come in and utilize their citizens to buy up your land. That's number one. So number two, once you do allow foreigners to buy in your country, there has to be some reasoning behind that. Are they immigrating to your country? So they're going through that process. So therefore you allow them to purchase because they're going to be moving there. Okay, great. Is it a situation where you have created a certain class where people from another country are allowed to come and vacation in your country? They can own that property under those exemptions, under those exceptions. Okay, great. Otherwise, what's the point of allowing people from another country to actually buy a property in your country? For Canadians, we obviously have a lot of people that are coming from Asian countries trying to buy up. The reason being, in a lot of their homelands, they're not able to hold the value of their money. So they would rather hold real estate in other countries because they can't do it through other means. So they want to go ahead and put money here. Especially if you live in a place where your government can easily manipulate your money supply. Those places want to get their money out as quickly as possible through whatever means possible. And I've seen a lot of different things over the years for how people try to smuggle money out of their country to places like Canada and the United States. And so will it be making homes cheaper for Canadians? Anytime you increase supply, you increase demand, then you know that supply is going to be under pressure, right? So the question is, should you be concerned about your own citizens and their purchasing power, right? Why do you want foreign buyers? Sometimes you want foreign investment into your country. You want to make it so that people want to come to your country. And we have no shortage of that here in Canada, people wanting to come here.
The whole world.
Yeah. I mean, granted, up until this current regime, we've been very much the talk of the town, right? Everybody wants to come here. You don't have to worry about people walking around with handguns and all this kind of stuff. We want to eat poutine. By and large, you know, people aren't worrying about Canadians. So lots of people already come here. So why are you trying to lure individuals here? It does not make it easier on your own citizens to be able to afford homes when they have foreign competition. If someone has got money in another country and they can't utilize it, remember, money isn't real. Money is just a medium of exchange. You do not want to hold money. You want to hold on to something of actual value, because all governments can manipulate it. So what good is $10 million in the bank if I can't utilize it? So 10 million of whatever currency, pay whatever, buy the actual asset, because you don't know if, for that person, they don't know if their government is going to inflate the money system, thereby making those $10 million worthless, right? We've seen this over and over again. So by and large, they're trying to just get rid of those dollars and acquire something of actual value. Now, the other side of that is there's absolutely fraud that goes on with some of these foreign buyers. I've absolutely seen it where someone comes in, pays a higher price for a property on this street, not this street, but on a street. And then the next person is selling their house and they're like, oh, the price has gone up. So they maybe put their house up on the market and somebody else, another foreign buyer, buys that property for that elevated price. Now you've set a new price for that street. And now everybody starts, you know, people start selling their house here or there. Once that's been established, foreign buyer A sells their property at an even higher amount. Party number two now sells their house at an even higher point. And they've taken their money, and within a matter of, you know, 2 months, 3 months, they've made, you know, however much more at that point in time. And now you start looking, does the overall value of that street hold?
No.
Or was that temporary? And in most situations, we realize that it's temporary. And then those values come back down to what they reasonably should be. And who gets hurt? Those people that paid those elevated amounts. And those two foreign buyers, they're gone with their money.
And that's a good picture for putting it on a street and just making it one house at a time. But when you extrapolate that out to an entire city or an entire country, it's a much deeper problem, right? And when it's one house on a street of 15, and all those, and so somebody sells the property, somebody else sells the property, everybody gets more money, and the foreigners take off, and now everything's way more expensive for things that they couldn't afford in the first place. And that's what we're dealing with across the country right now, right? So it's not on a scale of 15 homes, it's on a scale of tens of millions.
Well, you look at out west, you know, go to BC, a lot of those prices have been driven by foreign money. And, you know, if you're from there, if you didn't have a house, can't afford to buy a property now. I mean, regular homes, regular standard homes, $2 million.
Right.
Are you telling me that the people that work in Vancouver are all making $150,000, $200,000 each?
Right.
You got a household annual income of $250,000, $300,000?
If that's the case, I'm going to Vancouver.
Yeah, exactly. If employers want to pay more, right? Like you go to certain places like Banff or Fort McMurray, where you got a lot of tourism and stuff, you could go and you could make a really good hourly wage for doing something as simple as flipping a burger. Why? Because there's just not the amount of staff and people are willing to pay it. Great. But it doesn't help when the value of the properties are astronomical. You're never going to get ahead in that scenario. In a normal market, the appreciation on the properties are going to be somewhat compensatory with annual income, with people's incomes, right? Because you're only going to be able to pay in along what you make.
Yeah. And right now it's completely disproportionate for the limit of for how much properties have increased and how much wages have increased. They're nowhere near compatible.
Now that depends on where you live too. there are still lots of places in Canada that are extremely affordable.
Yes. And if you want to go live in middle Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Or go,
you want to go live in Kirkland Lake, Ontario, and there's a lot of mining, there's lots of jobs up there. You can go buy a house for $150,000. You can own a house on a barista salary, you know, for something like that.
There's no Starbucks up there, but
yeah, I don't know. There might be actually, but I know there's a Tim Hortons. But there's a lot of places that homes are actually really affordable, and you can go to, and you can take regular jobs and be able to afford them. Whereas you live in certain places, you have to have a high-end job, high-end income to be able to afford housing in those places.
Yeah, absolutely. So when Canada put this act into place, was do you think 2 years was long enough? Should it have been longer? Do you think they'll extend it after 2 years?
There should always be a foreign buyer's ban.
Okay.
And with exceptions, mm-hmm. with exemptions, you allow certain types. There is never a scenario where you want to allow foreigners to come up and buy your country up, unless they are immigrating to your country. You're just giving up your natural resources, right, if you allow that. That's my opinion on it. There should always be a ban, period, with exceptions.
Yeah, well, that would make perfect sense. That if this is a place like any country, if it's a place where you feel confident enough that that's a place you want to put your money, but not confident enough for yourself that you want to live in, well, then we don't want your money.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because so great, you might be buying property here. There's other people in this country that could buy that property, so we don't need your property ownership. We do need a higher population. Right. So
yeah,
if you want to buy property here, move here. If you don't want to move here, don't buy property here. Right. Like, that's a pretty fair expectation to have for somebody that wants to buy property in a country like Canada. Right. Yeah.
Look, I want to own property in other countries. My family's from India. Right. I want to own property there so I can go back and forth. I want to be able to travel back, see family, and have a piece of property in my cultural home, from my cultural home. Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd love to be able to have that option. But again, under exceptions, right? Now, if all of a sudden I start trying to acquire up all these parts of land in India, you know, it's going to put pressure on their own citizens. Now, maybe they have different rules and they're okay with that, because they want the money to come in, and maybe they have a tax where I have to pay more for that purpose, or people need to pay more for those reasons, you know, or there's exceptions. You can buy here in Canada, but you have to own it for a minimum of 5 years. You have to own it for a minimum of 5 years or 10 years or whatever. Otherwise, right? So that you can avoid some of those manipulations from occurring. Right. You want to somehow keep control in any situation where you have foreigners. You as a nation want to keep control of that ownership. You can't give them full control as you would your own citizens.
From what we just discussed, you said how important it is to put your in most countries, including Canada, to put your physical to put your cash into real assets and into properties and into actual physical things. So you are an investor in silver and gold and metals. Right now, where the economy stands, is silver and gold and precious metals, are they just as good of an investment as they were before? Are they getting better? Is if you have $40,000 that you're looking to put somewhere, do you go buy a bunch of silver and gold? Do you put it into property? That's
a really interesting question. Let me say this: precious metals you should never be looking at them as an investment. It's not an investment. It's a store of value. It's an important thing to understand about the difference in money versus currency. Precious metals are a store of value. Currency does not store value, which is why it can be inflated and deflated. It goes up and down based on how much the government prints, whereas precious metals are going to hold value of your dollar. If there are more dollars in circulation, then the value of that precious metal goes up. Mm-hmm. If there are less, then it goes down, because it's not meant to be a investment tool. Which is why it's also tax exempt at physical bullion. So as a result, you want to really hold it to be able to just hold your purchasing power, right? To be able to store your wealth. That's really what precious metals are for. So is it a good time to have precious metals? I personally think it's an insurance policy. It's always a good time if you're trying to hold value, right? And if you're in a scenario where you think that your government or the world governments are going to print to infinity, which seems sure likely. What they're saying, it seems quite likely. They're talking about this all the time about oh my goodness, I have this from March of this year, you know.
Federal abandoned plan to balance budget and debt. Oh gosh.
Right? I mean, they want to tell you that, hey, we're only going to carry these small debts. Meanwhile, these small deficits, they're adding billions. Trudeau at this point has added more to our debt than all the other prime ministers that have come before him combined. So when we look at precious metals, it's a store of value. That's why you keep it. It's a hedge. You hold on to it just to protect your purchasing power. And then that way you're never going to have all of your wealth there, but you always want to have a percentage protected in precious metals. And then you have other types of investments as well. So it's part of a portfolio.
Okay, so let me ask for your personal experience and what you for your strategy. Is the strategy that you buy precious metals at a lower price, obviously, and it's a store of value. And so if the value of the currency goes down and the value of the precious metals goes up, that's very easily understandable. But let's say that is the strategy then to when the precious metals are at a high, then you sell for the currency. But let's say the currency becomes so worthless that there's no point in selling metals for a currency that you can't spend anything on. So then what's the strategy?
That's a great question. When you have a situation where you think that you're going to have hyperinflation, where the currency has been devalued so much of it has been printed, it's called hyperinflation, and it's happening at such an accelerated rate. At that point, you're saying, yeah, I don't want to now convert my precious metals into this currency that's losing value faster than I can spend it. What you're going to have happen, and what happens with all countries, this happens on an ongoing basis. It's known as a reset. You wipe away that old currency and you start a new one. You start a new one. We've seen this. The most recent one I know of is, I believe, in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. I know of the one in Zimbabwe anyways, where they had the Zimbabwe dollar. Now that they went within 5 years, they went from this dollar that I believe was on par with the euro to it became like a million to one. And literally, it's better to a better use of those dollars was burning them.
Right. Keep yourself
and using them for heat than actually spending them. That literally is what it came down to. And then they got rid of them entirely. So they no longer have dollars, and that all happened within 5 years. Mm-hmm. So now if you had precious metals, your precious metals are immediately of value in that new currency because they're a store of value. So whatever that new currency is valued at, you've now protected your wealth in that new denomination. That's the play there. You could, if your dollar was to even out, was to stop fluctuating, and it is devalued, it's gone up, it's inflated a lot, and now everything is more expensive. Sure, absolutely, you could convert your precious metal back into currency at that point, and then you're able to purchase, you know, more homes and things like that if you want at that point in time. That's absolutely a scenario, but again, remember the plan for precious metals is to protect your purchasing power, to store your value, and many families will purchase precious metals so that they can pass their wealth onto the next generation outside of traditional trusts and wills and things like that. Tax exempt way, right?
Help me understand this one. If the value of a currency gets so deflated that it's worthless, and so you then wait for them to restart a new currency, and now your precious metals are valuable again. If let's say it's at the point where it's completely devalued, let's use Canadian dollar as an example. I know that's unlikely so let's use the Canadian dollar as an example, that if it goes to zero, trading in your silver for Canadian dollars gets you nothing. So if you get, so it is another strategy to, you know, precious metals are valuable internationally, and so is another strategy to trade the precious metals for a higher value currency and then use that currency in your country.
Okay, so if the stability of your currency, of the Canadian dollar, if the stability is lost,
yeah,
it means nothing for precious metals, because for precious metals, it has value in every currency.
Yeah,
you can take that to any country and convert it to those denominations. You can take a piece of gold and buy your neighbor's car with it.
Someone in China wants gold just as much as they do here, right? So you could go across the entire world and that's still, people know that's valuable.
That's right.
So, yeah.
They understand the value it across the world. You can switch it and off you go. Or, like I said, if there's ever a worldwide collapse, which, you know, obviously now we're talking apocalypse range, but if there is a collapse that you can utilize it, you can always utilize precious metals.
So your point is that's why
some people believe in actually having smaller denominations, smaller sizes as well, so that if you ever have to, trade in precious metals, you can trade in small amounts rather than having to have 100-ounce bars or things like that, yeah, which you'd have to cut off pieces.
So your point is that if the dollar got so devalued that it was worthless and you couldn't trade dollars, rather than getting another currency that's more valuable, you just trade the precious metals because those are the value.
Yeah, that's right. They're just a store of value. That's actually the key, is they are a store of value. Money's not real, right? It's a concept. It's an idea for how we are able to transfer stored up energy. If I've got tomatoes and you've got cows, well, you could sell me a cow right now, but my tomatoes won't be ready for another 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So how did you do that? Well, you had a debt note, right? And that debt note, okay, when my tomatoes comes up, I'm going to pay you. That's really all currency is. But we started off with, hey, if we agree that these coins have value, then I give you this, and then you can pay for that.
Right.
We were able to store up value in that way. And how did we do that? Because we know that there's the rarity of it, of precious metals. And so as a result, we know that it has an intrinsic value and we can be able to trade using it as a medium of exchange, using it as a material to be able to exchange value. And when the powers to be found out that you could store up value in that way, that's why you try to hoard gold. That's why you try to store that, because you can't store up tomatoes. They're going to go bad on you, right?
Yeah.
You can't store up cows. They're going to die. But you can store that value in gold and silver. And that's what people realized a long time ago, that you could effectively store up that energy. You can't eat it, but you can sort of store that energy of a person that's gone before you and pass it on. That's really what that's about.
So I just want to recap and tell me if I'm wrong. The first reason you personally own precious metals is because it's a store of value. And so if the currency that you own or the country that you're in is becoming less and less and your money is becoming less valuable, it doesn't matter because you, what actually it does, it because now the precious metals you own, when your currency drops, now those precious metals are actually worth more. They're not still the same, right? So that's the first reason. If somebody were to ask you, Neil, why, what are the reasons you own? That's the first one you'd say. Second would be in case there comes a point where your dollar is actually worthless, then this is something that is tradable, that internationally people find valuable. Would that be number two, or am I missing one?
Yeah, number one reason for precious metals is to store value, is to be able to hold the value of what you've already made, and not from an investment. Personally, I don't think it's a great idea from an investment standpoint. Because the moment you make precious metals an investment, it's now taxable.
Ah.
It's now a taxable event. If you're buying them for investment purposes, it's now a taxable event. So I'm never going to promote buying precious metals for investment. And so store of value. You want to keep that value. And for me, I can pass that on from me to my kids.
Right.
Directly without tax implications.
Right.
So that's another
physically purpose. Hand it to them.
Yeah.
Like that's right. It doesn't have to, there's no wealth exchange. It's literally like, here's the physical metal. It's in my possession. Now it's in yours.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Right. Yeah, so you're able to transfer it directly.
Yeah. Or when it comes to other types of wealth, or assets, when you die, the government always gets their fingers in there.
It's a non-taxable event. It's protected federally. It's in the Banking Act. It's in the Income Tax Act. You can actually go look up these acts and read it right in there. They are protected.